The Man of Mode by George Etheridge, with Derek Jacobi as Dorimant, Anna Massey as Lady Townley, Nigel Stock as Old Bel-Air, Sarah Bedell as Mrs. Lovett, Maureen O'Brien as Belinda, John Webb as Sir Fopling Flutter, and Geoffrey Collins as Medley. The music's been composed and arranged by Martin Best. The action of the play takes place in London in 1675. The Man of Mode.
Like dancers on the ropes, poor poets fare. Most perish young, the rest in danger are. This one would think should make our authors wary, but gamester-like the giddy fools miscarry. A lucky hand or two so tempts them on, they cannot leave off play till they're undone. With modest fears amused us first begin, like a young wench newly enticed to sin, but tickled once with praise by her goodwill, the wanton fool would never more lie still. 'Tis an old mistress you'll meet here tonight, whose charms you once have looked on with delight, but now of late such dirty drabs have known ye, a muse of a better sort's ashamed to own you. Nature, well drawn and wit, must now give place to gaudy nonsense and to dull grimace. Nor is it strange that you should like so much that kind of wit, for most of yours is such. But I'm afraid that while to France we go, to bring you home fine dresses, dance, and show, the stage like you will but more foppish grow. Of foreign wares, why should we fetch the scum, when we can be so richly served at home? 'Tis by your follies that we players thrive, as the physicians by diseases live, and as each year some new distemper reigns, whose friendly poison helps to increase their gains, so among you there starts up every day some new unheard-of fool for us to play. Then, for your own sakes, be not too severe, nor what you all admire at home, damn here.
For some ages had the pride of Spain made the sun shine on half the world in vain.
Now, for some ages had the pride of Spain made the sun shine on half the world in vain.
For Mrs. Lovett. What a dull, insipid thing is a billy-doo written in cold blood after the heat of the business is over. It is a tax upon good nature, which I have here been labouring to pay, and have done it, but with much regret. "'Twill have the same fate, I know, that all my notes to her have had of late. "'Twill not be thought kind enough. "'Faith, women are in the right when they jealously examine our letters, "'for in them we always first discover our decay of passion. "'Hey, who waits?
"'Sir?'
"'Call a footman.'
Well, "'None of them are come yet.
"'Oh, dogs, will they ever lie snoring abed till noon?'
"'Tis all one, sir, and if they're up you indulge them so, "'they're ever poaching after whores all the morning.
"'Take notice, henceforward, who's wanting in his duty. "'The next clap he gets he shall rot for an example.' What vermin are those chatting about?
Foggy Nan, the orange woman, and swearing Tom, the shoemaker.
Go, Handy. Call in that overgrown jade, Foggy Nan, with the flasket of guts before her. Fruit is refreshing in a morning.
I will, sir.
It is not that I love you less than when before your feet I lay.
Oh. Here she is, sir.
How now, double tripe? What news do you bring?
News? Here's the best fruit has come to town to year. Gad, I was up before 4 o'clock this morning and bought all the choice in the market. Ugh,
the nasty refuse of your shop. The citizens buy better on a holiday and they walk to Tottenham.
Oh, good or bad, tis all one. I never knew you commend anything. Lord, would the ladies had heard you talk of them as I have done. Here, bid your man give me an angel for my basket.
Oh, give the board her fruit again.
Well, on my conscience, I never was the like of you. God's my life, I'd almost forgot to tell you. There is a young gentlewoman lately come to town with her mother that is so taken with you.
Is she handsome?
Nay, gad, there are a few finer women, I tell you, but so. And a hugest fortune, they say. Here, eat this peach. It comes from the stone. It is better than any Newington you've tasted.
This fine woman, I'll lay my life, is some awkward, ill-fashioned country toad. Who, not having above 4 dozen of black hairs on her head, has adorned her baldness with a large white frizz, that she may look sparkishly in the forefront of the king's box at an old play.
Dad, you'd change your note more quickly if you did but see her.
How came she to know me?
She saw you yesterday at the exchange. She told me you came and fooled with the woman at the next shop.
I remember there was a mask observing me, indeed. Fooled, did you say?
Aye, I vow she told me 20 things you said to and acted with Ed and with her body so like you.
Mr. Medley, sir.
Sorry, my life, my joy, my darling sin, how dost thou?
Oh, what a filthy trick these men have got of kissing one another.
Why do you suffer this cartload of scandal to come near you, to act your go-between and make your neighbours think you're so improvident to need a board? Go. You are an insignificant brandy bottle.
Oh, nay, there you wrong her. 3 quarts of canary is her business.
Would you please, gentlemen? Pray pay me, Mr. Dorriman, and do not abuse me so. I have an honester way of living, you know it.
Was there ever such a resty board?
Oh, some jade trick she has, but she makes amends when she's in good humour. Come, tell me the lady's name. And handy shall pay you.
I must not. She forbid me.
That's a sure sign she would have you.
Where does she live?
They lodge at my house.
Nay, then she's in a hopeful way.
Good Mr. Medley, say your pleasure of me, but take heed how you affront my house, God's my life, in a hopeful way.
Prithee at peace. What kind of woman's the mother?
A goodly, grave, gentlewoman. Lord, how she talks against the wild young men of the town. As for your part, she thinks you an arrant devil. Should she see you, on my conscience, she would look if you had not a cloven foot.
Oh, does she know me?
Only by hearsay. 1,000 horrid stories have been told her of you, and she believes them all.
By the character, this should be the famous Lady Woodville and her daughter, Harriet, up from Hampshire.
Do you know them?
Both very well. The mother's a great admirer of the forms and civility of the last age.
This is a good account of the mother, pray. What is the daughter?
Why, first, she's an heiress, vastly rich.
And handsome?
What alteration a 12-month may have bred in her, I know not, but a year ago, she was the beautifulest creature I ever saw. A fine, easy, clean shape, light brown hair in abundance. Her features regular, her complexion clear and lively, large, wanton eyes, but above all, a mouth that has made me kiss it 1,000 times in imagination. Teeth white and even, and pretty, pouting lips, with a little moisture ever hanging on them that look like the province rose fresh on the bush ere the morning sun has quite drawn up the dew.
Rapture. Mere rapture.
Nay, Gad, he tells you true. She's a delicate creature.
Has she wit?
More than is usual in her sex, and as much malice.
Flesh and blood cannot hear this, and not long to know her. Call in the shoemaker.
Good Mr. Dorriman, pay me. Gad, I'd rather give you my fruit than stay to be abused by that foul-mouthed rogue, the shoemaker. What you gentlemen say, it matters not much, but such a dirty fellow does one more disgrace.
Handy, give her 10 shillings. And be sure you tell the young gentlewoman I must be acquainted with her.
Now do you long to be tempting this pretty creature? Well, heavens mend you.
Farewell, bog.
Come.
Dorriman, when did you see your pis-aller, your last resort, as you call her, Mrs. Lovett?
Oh, not these 2 days.
And how stand affairs between you?
Oh, there's been a great patching of late, much ado. We make a shift to hang together.
I wonder how her mighty spirit bears it.
Ill enough on all conscience. I never knew so violent a creature.
She's the most passionate in her love and the most extravagant in her jealousy of any woman I ever heard of. What note is that?
An excuse I'm going to send her for the neglect I have been guilty of.
Prithee, read it.
No, but if you will take the pains, you may.
Oh. Mrs. Lovett, I never was a lover of business. But now I have a just reason to hate it, since it has kept me these 2 days from seeing you. I intend to wait upon you in the afternoon, and in the pleasure of your conversation, forget all I have suffered during this tedious absence. This business of yours, Dorriman, has been with our visit at the playhouse. I've had an eye on you. If some malicious body should betray you, this kind note would hardly make your peace with her.
I desire no better.
Why, would a knowledge of it oblige you?
Most infinitely. Next to the coming to a good understanding with a new mistress, I love a quarrel with an old one. But the devil's in. There's been just a calm in my affairs of late. I've not had the pleasure of making a woman so much as break a fan, to be sullen, or forswear herself these 3 days.
Ah, very great misfortune. Let me see. I love mischief well enough to forward this business myself. I'll about it presently. And though I know the truth of what you've done will set her a-raving, I'll heighten it a little with invention. Leave her in a fit and be here again before you're ready.
Yeah, please. Stay. You may spare yourself the labour.
What?
The business is undertaken already by one who will manage it with as much address, and I think with a little more malice than you can.
Who in the devil's name can this be?
Why, the wizard. The very wizard you saw me with.
But does she love mischief so well as to betray herself, despite another?
This mask, for a farther confirmation of what I have been these 2 days swearing to her, made me yesterday at the playhouse make her a promise before her face utterly to break off with Lovett. And because she tenders my reputation and would not have me do a barbarous thing, has contrived a way to give me a handsome occasion.
Very good.
She intends, about an hour before me this afternoon, to make Lovett a visit.
Is she a friend?
Oh, an intimate friend.
Better and better, pray proceed.
She means, insensibly, to insinuate a discourse of me, and artificially raise Lovett's jealousy to such a height that, transported with the first motions of her passion, she shall fly upon me with all the fury imaginable as soon as ever I enter. The quarrel being thus happily begun, I am to play my part, confess and justify all my roguery, swear her impertinence and ill humour makes her intolerable, tax her with the next fop that comes into my head, and in a huff march away, slight her, and leave her, to be taken by whosoever thinks it worth his time to lie down before her. Oh,
this wizard is a spark, and has a genius that makes her worthy of yourself, Dorimant.
The shoemaker, sir.
Handy, seal this note, and bid a footman run with it presently to Mrs. Lovett.
Yes, sir.
Since you're resolved on a quarrel, why do you send her this kind note?
To keep her at home in order to do the business. Oh, now, you drunken sot.
Splad, you have no reason to talk. I've not had a bottle of sack of yours in me belly this fortnight.
Toggin Ann says your neighbours take notice what a heathen you are and design to inform the bishop and have you burned for an atheist.
Janner! Daniel!
Draw on my new shoes.
Here's a shoe.
Oh, sits with more wrinkles than there are in an angry bully's forehead.
Splad, as smooth as your mistress's skin does upon her. So, strike your foot in home. Splad, if e'er a monsieur of 'em all make more fashionable wear, I'll be content to have me ears whipped off with my own paring knife. Oh, come, master. Your health this morning next my heart now. Is it a good show?
Give him half a crown.
Not without he will promise to be splatty.
Do not debauch my servant, sirrah.
I only tip him the wink. He knows an ale house from an ovil.
My coat, quickly.
Where shall we dine today?
Where you will.
Mr. Bel Air.
Here comes a good third man.
Your servant, gentlemen.
Mr. Belair. How will you answer this visit to your honourable mistress, Emilia? It is not her interest you should keep company with men of sense who will be talking reason.
I do not fear her pardon. Do you but grant me yours for my neglect of late?
To show you I am free from all resentment, may the beautiful cause of our misfortune give you all the joys happy lovers have shared since the world began.
You wish me in heaven, but you believe me on my journey to hell.
Were I so near marriage, I should cry out by fits as I ride in my coach. Cuckold, cuckold,
preach
cuckold,
no
cuckold.
More on this text. I am determined to marry, and there is no hope of my conversion.
Leave your unnecessary fiddling. A wasp that's buzzing about a man's nose at dinner is not more troublesome than thou art.
You love to have your clothes hang just, sir.
I love to be well-dressed, sir, and think it no scandal to my understanding.
Will you use the essence or orange flower water?
I will smell... as I do today, no offence to the ladies' noses.
Your pleasure, sir.
That a man's excellency should lie in neatly tying of a ribbon or a cravat.
There is a great critic, I hear, in these matters lately arrived, piping hot from Paris.
Sir Fopling Flutter, you
the
mean?
The same.
He thinks himself the pattern of modern gallantry.
He is, indeed, the pattern of modern foppery.
What a pretty lisp he has.
Yeah, oh, that he affects in imitation of the people of quality of France. Mm.
He has been, as the sparkish word is, brisk upon the ladies already.
Ah.
He was yesterday at my Aunt Townley's and gave Mrs. Lovett a catalogue of his good qualities. Qualities, under the character of a complete gentleman who, according to Sir Fopling, ought to dress well, dance well, fence well, have a genius for love letters, an agreeable voice for a chamber, be very amorous, something discreet, but not over-constant.
I am glad he pitched upon Lovett.
How so?
I wanted a fop to lay to her charge, and this is as pat as may be.
I am confident she loves no man but you.
The good fortune were enough to make me vain, but that I am, in my nature, modest.
Hark you, Dorimant, with your leave, Mr. Medley, it is only a secret concerning a fair lady.
Well, your good breeding, sir, gives you too much trouble. You might have whispered without all this ceremony.
How stand your affairs with Belinda of late?
She's that little jilting baggage.
Nay, I believe her false enough, but she's ne'er the worse for your purpose. She was with you yesterday in a disguise at the play.
There we fell out and resolved never to speak to one another more.
The occasion?
Want of courage to meet me at the place appointed. Oh. These young women apprehend loving as much as the young men do fighting, at first. But once entered, like them too, they all turn bullies straight.
Mr. Belair, sir, your man without desires to speak with you.
Gentlemen, I'll return immediately.
Ah, a very pretty fellow, Miss Belair.
He's handsome, well-bred, and by much the most tolerable of all the young men that do not abound in wit.
You and he have grown very intimate, I see. What was that whisper?
A thing which he would fain have known, but I did not think it fit to tell him. It might have frightened him from his honourable intentions of marrying Amelia.
Amelia, give her a due, has the best reputation of any young woman about the town, who has beauty enough to provoke detraction. Her carriage is unaffected, her discourse modest, not at all censorious, nor pretending like the counterfeits of the age.
She's a discreet maid, and I believe nothing can corrupt her but a husband.
A husband?
Yes, a husband. I have known many women make a difficulty of losing a maidenhead, who have afterwards made none of making a cuckold.
This prudent consideration, I am apt to think, has made you confirm poor Belair in the desperate resolution he has to marry.
Government, I am undone.
Oh.
My man has brought the most surprising news of the world.
Some strange misfortune has befallen your love?
My father came to town last night and lodges in the very house where my Amelia lies.
Does he know it is with her you are in love?
He knows I love, but knows not whom, without some officious sot has betrayed me.
Your Aunt Townley is your confidant and favours the business.
I do not apprehend any ill office from her. I have received a letter in which I am commanded by my father to meet him at my aunt's this afternoon. He tells me he has made a match for me and bids me resolve to be obedient to his will or expect to be disinherited.
Now's your time, Belair. Never had lover such an opportunity of giving a generous proof of his passion.
As how, I pray?
Why, hang an estate, marry Amelia out of hand and provoke your father to do what he threatens. But 'tis but despising a coach, humbling yourself to a pair of galoshes, being out of countenance when you meet your friends, pointing that and pitied wherever you go.
I could find in my heart to resolve not to marry at all.
Oh, fie, that would spoil a good jest and disappoint the well-natured town of an occasion of laughing at you.
Mm-hmm. The storm I have so long expected hangs o'er my head and begins to pour down upon me. I am on the rack and can have no rest till I'm satisfied in what I fear. Where do you dine?
At Long's, or Locket's.
At Long's, let it be.
I'll run and see Amelia and inform myself how matters stand. If my misfortunes are not so great as to make me unfit for company, I'll be with you.
Handy, is the coach at the door?
You did not bid me send for it.
Eternal blockhead. Hey, sot.
Did you call me, sir?
I hope you have no just exception to the name, sir.
I have sense, sir.
Not so much as a fly in winter. How did you come, Medley?
In a chair. You may have a hackney coach, if you please, sir.
I may ride the elephant, if I please, sir. Call another chair, and let my coach follow to Long's.
Amelia, all had been discovered.
I tremble with the apprehension still.
That my brother, your Harry's father, should take lodgings in the very house where you lie.
It was lucky we had timely notice to warn the people to be secret.
He seems to be a mighty good-humoured old man.
He ever had a notable smirking way with him.
He calls me rogue, tells me he can't abide me, and does so bepat me.
On my word, you were much in his favour then.
He's been very inquisitive, I'm told, about my family. My reputation and my fortune.
I am confident he does not in the least suspect you are the woman his son's in love with.
What should make him then inform himself so particularly of me?
He was always of a very loving temper himself. It may be he has a doting fit upon him. Who knows?
Aunt, it cannot be.
Ah, here comes my nephew. Harry, where did you leave your father?
Writing a note within. Amelia. This early visit looks as if some kind jealousy would not let you rest at home.
The knowledge I have of my rival gives me a little cause to fear your constancy.
My constancy? I vow.
Do not vow. Our love is frail as is our life, and full as little in our power. And are you sure you shall outlive this day?
I'm not. But when we are in perfect health, 'twere an idle thing to fright ourselves with the thoughts of sudden death.
Pray, what has passed between you and your father in the garden?
He's firm in his resolution. Tells me I must marry Harriet Woodville, or swears he'll marry himself and disinherit me. When I saw I could not prevail with him to be more indulgent, I dissembled an obedience to his will, which has composed his passion and will give us time and, I hope, opportunity to deceive him.
Harry!
Peace! Here he comes.
Harry! Ah, Harry! Take this and let your man carry it for me to Mr. Ferb's chamber, my lawyer in the temple.
Yes, Father.
Amelia. Dodd, I am glad to see thee here. Make much of her, sister. She's one of the best of your acquaintance. I like her countenance and her behaviour well. She has a modesty that is not common in this age. A Dodd she has.
I know her value, brother, and esteem her accordingly.
Advise her to wear a little more mirth in her face. A Dodd, she's too serious.
The fault is very excusable in a young woman.
Nay, a Dodd, I like her ne'er the worse. Her melancholy beauty has her charms. I love a pretty sadness in a face which varies now and then like changeable colours into a smile.
Methinks you speak very feelingly, brother.
I am but 55, sister, you know, an age not altogether unsensible. Ah, cheer up, sweet Amelia. I have a secret to tell thee, my chance to make thee merry. We three will make collation together anon. In the meantime, Mum, I can't abide you. Go. I can't abide you. Harry, come, you must along with me to my Lady Woodville to see her daughter. I'm going to slip the boy at a mistress.
At a wife, sir, you would say.
You need not look so glum, sir. A wife is no curse when she brings the blessing of a good estate with her. But an idle town flirt with a painted face, a rotten reputation, and a crassy fortune, the Dodd is the devil and all. And such a one I hear you are in league with.
I cannot help detraction, sir.
Ah, out of piss on their britches. There are keeping fools enough for such flaunting baggages, and they're even too good for them. Amelia, remember, knight. Go. You're a rogue. You're a rogue. Fare you well. Come along, sir.
Oh, my word, the old man comes on apace. I'll lay my life, he's smitten.
Oh, this is nothing but the pleasantness of his humour.
I know him better than you. Let it work, it may prove lucky.
Madam, Mr. Medley has sent to know whether a visit will not be troublesome this afternoon.
Send him word his visits never are so.
Medley's a very pleasant man.
He's a very necessary man among us women. Then he knows all the little news of the town. Mr. Dorriman swears a flea or a maggot is not made more monstrous by a magnifying glass than a story is by his telling it.
Oh, here he comes.
Pray, where's your friend, Mr. Dorriman?
Soliciting his affairs. He's a man of great employment. Has more mistresses now depending than the most eminent lawyer in England has causes.
Here has been Mrs. Lovett, so uneasy and out of humour these 2 days.
How strangely love and jealousy rage in that poor woman.
She could not depict out a devil upon earth so proper as Dorriman to torment her. Has made her break a dozen or two of fans already, tear half a score of points in pieces, and destroy hoods and knots without number.
We heard of a pleasant serenade he gave her t'other night.
A Danish serenade with kettle drums and trumpets.
Barbarous!
What? You are of the number of the ladies whose ears are grown so delicate since our operas you can be charmed with nothing but flute do and French hautboy.
Leave your raillery and tell us, is there any new wit come forth? Songs or novels?
There is. The Art of Affectation, written by a late beauty of quality, teaching you how to draw up your breasts, stretch up your neck, thrust out your breech, play with your head and toss up your nose, bite your lips, to turn up your eyes, to speak in a silly, soft tone of a voice, and use all the foolish French words that will infallibly make your person and conversation charmant, with a short apology at the latter end in behalf of young ladies, who notoriously wash and paint, though they have naturally good complexions.
What a deal of stuff you tell us!
Well, such as the town affords, madam.
Pray, forbear your idle stories, and give us an account of the state of love as it now stands.
Truly, there has been some revolutions in those affairs. Great chopping and changing among the old, and some new lovers, whom malice, indiscretion, and misfortune have luckily brought into play.
What think you of walking into the next room and sitting down before you engage in this business?
Well, I wait upon you, and I hope the women are commonly unreasonable by the plenty of scandal I shall discover to give you a very good content, ladies.
Pert.
Madam.
My pocket glass. Oh, I hate myself. I look so ill today.
Hate the wicked cause, aunt. That base man, Mr. Dorriman, who makes you torment and vex yourself continually.
He is to blame, indeed.
To blame? To be 2 days without sending, writing, or coming near you, contrary to his oath and covenant.
I know he is a devil, but he has something of the angel yet undefaced in him, which makes him so charming and agreeable that I must love him, be he never so wicked.
I little thought, madam, to see your spirit tamed to this degree, who banished poor Mr. Lackwood but for taking up another lady's fan in your presence.
My knowing of such odious fools contributes to the making of me love Dorriment the better.
Your knowing of Mr. Dorriment, in my mind, should rather make you hate all mankind.
So it does, beside himself.
Pray, what excuse does he make in his letter?
He has had business.
Business? A modish man is always very busy when he is in pursuit of a new mistress.
Some fop has bribed you to rail at him. He had business. I will believe it, and I will forgive him.
You may forgive him anything, but I shall never forgive him his turning me into ridicule, as I hear he does.
I perceive you are of the number of those fools his wit has made his enemies.
I wish Mr. Dorriman would not make it his business to defame you.
Should he? I'd rather be made infamous by him than owe my reputation to the dull discretion of those fops you talk of. Belinda!
My dear.
Oh, you've been unkind of late.
Do not say unkind. Say unhappy.
I could chide you. Where have you been these 2 days?
Pity me rather, my dear. Where I have been so tired with 2 or 3 country gentlewomen whose conversation has been more insufferable than a country fiddle.
Are they relations?
No. Welsh acquaintance I made when I was last year at St. Winifred's.
Oh, provoking creatures, how could you endure them? Will you share some tea with me?
Pert.
Now to carry on my plot. Nothing but love for Dorriman could make me capable of so much falsehood. 'Tis time to begin, lest Dorriman should come before her jealousy has stung her.
I was yesterday at a play with them, where I was fain to show them the beau monde.
Did you see Dorriman there?
I did. And imagine you were there with him, but had no mind to own it.
What should make you think so?
A lady masked in a pretty déshabillé, whom Dorriman entertained with more respect than the gallant steward common visit.
Dorriman at the play, entertaining a mask? Oh, heavens. Did he stay all the while?
Till the play was done, and then led her out, which confirms me it was you.
Traitor!
Now you may believe he had business. And you may forgive him, too.
Ingrateful, perjured man!
You seem so much concerned, my dear. I fear I have told you unawares what I had better have concealed for your quiet.
What manner of shape had she?
Tall and slender.
Ah.
Her motions were very genteel. Certainly she must be some person of condition.
Shame and confusion be ever in her face when she shows it.
I should blame your discretion for loving that wild man, my dear. But they say he has a way so bewitching that few can defend their hearts who know him.
Oh, I would tear him from mine or die in the attempt.
Be more moderate.
Would I had daggers, darts, or poisoned arrows in my breast so I could but remove the thought of him from thence.
Fie, your transports are too violent, my dear. This may be but an accidental gallantry, and it is likely ended at her coach.
Ha-ha! May all the passions that are raised by neglected love, jealousy, indignation, spite, and thirst of revenge eternally rage in her soul as they do now in mine.
Madam, Mr. Dorriman.
I will not see him.
I told him you were within, madam.
Well, say you lied. Say I am busy. Shut the door, say anything.
He's here, madam.
A taste of death, a do at heaven arrive. But we, this paradise, approach alive. What dancing, Mrs. Lovett? The galloping nag without a fiddle?
Oh, hell and furies!
I fear this restlessness of the body, madam, proceeds from an unquietness of the mind. What unlucky accident put you out of humour? Hair shaded awry? Or some other little mistake in setting you in order?
Faithless, inhumane, barbarous man!
Good. Now the alarm strikes.
Without sense of love, of honour, or of gratitude, tell me, for I will know. Devil! Masked she was. You were with at the play yesterday?
Faith, I resolved as much as you. But the devil was obstinate and would not tell me.
False in this as in your vows to me, you do know.
The truth is, I did all I could to know.
And dare you own it to my face? Oh! Oh!
Oh, spare your fan, madam. You're growing hot.
Oh!
You will have wanted to cool you.
Horror and distraction seize you. Sorrow and remorse gnaw your soul and punish all your perjuries to me.
So thunder breaks the cloud in twain and makes a passage for the rain. Linda, you are the devil that have raised this storm. You were at the play yesterday and have been making discoveries to your dear.
You are the most mistaken man in the world.
It must be so. And here I vow revenge, resolved to pursue and persecute you more impertinently than ever any loving fop did his mistress. Hunt you in the park, dog you in every visit you make, haunt you at the plays and in the drawing room, hang my nose in your neck, and talk to you whether you will or no, and ever look upon you with such dying eyes till your friends grow jealous of me, send you out of town, and the world suspect your reputation. And my Lady Dunn is when we go from hence.
I'll meet you there.
Enough.
Stand off. You shall not stare upon her so.
Good, if there's one made jealous already.
Is this the constancy you vowed?
Constancy? At my years? 'Tis not a virtue in season.
Dissembler. Damned dissembler!
I am so, I confess. Good nature and good manners corrupt me. I am honest in my inclinations, and would not make a lady a little in years believe I think her young, wilfully mistake art for nature, and seem as fond of a thing I am weary of as when I doted on't in earnest.
Think on your oaths, your vows and protestations, perjured man.
I made them when I was in love.
And therefore ought they not to bind?
When love grows disease, the best thing we can do is to put it to a violent death. I cannot endure the torture of a lingering and consumptive passion.
Can you think mine sickly?
No, 'tis desperately ill. What worse symptoms are there than you're being always uneasy when I visit you. You're picking quarrels with me on slight occasions.
Yes,
and in my absence, kindly listening to the impertinences of every fashionable fool that talks to you.
What fashionable fool can you lay to my charge?
Why, the very cock-fool of all those fools. Sir Fopling Flutter.
I never saw him in my life but once.
The worse woman you, at first sight, to put on all your charms, to entertain him with that softness in your voice and all that wanton kindness in your eyes you so notoriously affect when you design a conquest.
So damned a lie did never malice yet invent. Who told you this?
No matter. But I should learn that you can dote on a senseless caper, a tawdry French ribbon, and a formal cravat.
You make me mad!
Our guilty conscience may do much. Go on, be the game mistress of the town, and enter all our young fops as fast as they come from travail.
Ah, ha-ha. This jealousy is a mere pretense, a cursed trick of your own devising. I know you.
Believe it, and all the ill of me you can. I would not have a woman have the least good thought of me that can think well of fopling. Farewell. Fall to, and much good may it do you with the coxcomb.
Oh, stay, and I will tell you all.
I have been told. Too much. Already.
Call him again.
We'll let him go. A fair riddance.
Run, I say, call him again. I will have him called.
The devil should carry him away first, were it my concern.
He has frightened me from the very thoughts of loving men. For heaven's sake, my dear, do not discover what I told you. I dread his tongue as much as you ought to have done his friendship.
He's gone, madam.
Lightning blast him.
When I told him you desired him to come back, he smiled, made a mouth at me, flung into his coach and said...
What did he say?
Drive away, and then repeated verses.
Monster. Barbarian. I could tear myself to... pieces! Revenge. Nothing but revenge can ease me. Plague, war, famine, fire, all that can bring universal ruin and misery on mankind. With joy I'd perish to have you in my power, but this moment!
Follow, madam. Leave her not in this outrageous passion.
Dorimond has given me the proof which I desired of his love. But 'tis a proof of his ill nature, too. I wish I had not seen him use her so. I sigh to think that Dorimond may be one day as faithless and unkind to me.
Dear Madam Harriet, let me set that curl in order.
Let me alone. I will shake them all out of order.
Will you ever leave off this wildness?
Torment me not.
Oh, look, there's a knot falling off.
Let it drop.
But one pitten, dear Madam.
How do I daily suffer under thy officious fingers?
Oh, the difference that is between you and my Lady Dapper.
How on
uneasy as she is if her least thing be amiss about her.
She is indeed most exact. That women should sit up for beauty as much in spite of nature as some men have done for wit.
I hope without offence one may endeavour to make oneself agreeable.
Not when 'tis impossible, busy. Women, then, ought to be no more fond of dressing than fools should be of talking. Hoods and modesty, masks and silence, things that shadow and conceal. They should think of nothing else.
Oh, jeez, you. Oh, madam, what will your mother think has become of you? For heaven's sake, go in again.
I won't.
This is the extravagantest thing that you ever did in your life. To leave her and a gentleman is to be your husband?
My husband? Hast thou so little wit to think I spoke what I meant when I overjoyed her in the country? With a low curtsy and a what you please, madam, I shall ever be obedient.
Oh, nay, I know not. You have so many fetches.
And this was one to get her up to London. Nothing else, I assure thee.
Well, young Mr. Belair, in my mind, is a fine man.
Varnished over with good breeding, many a blockhead makes a tolerable show.
Oh, I wonder you do not like him.
I think, busy, I might be brought to endure him. And that is all a reasonable woman should expect in a husband. But there is duty in the case. And like the haughty Merab, I find much aversion in my stubborn mind, which is bred by being promised and designed. Oh,
I wish you did not design your own ruin. No, I partly guess your inclinations, madam. That Mr. Dorriman.
Leave your prating and sing some foolish song or other.
I will. The song you loved so well ever since you saw Mr. Dorriman. When first Amintas charmed my heart, my heedless sheep began to stray. The wolves soon stole the greatest part, and all will now be made a prey. Ah, let not love your thoughts possess. 'Tis fatal to a shepherdess. The dangerous passion you must shun, or else like me be quite undone.
Shall I be paid down by a covetous parent for a purchase? I need no land. No. I'll lay myself out all in love.
Oh,
it is decreed that...
What generous resolution are you making, madam?
Only to be disobedient, sir.
Let me join hands with you in that.
Oh, with all my heart. I never thought I should have given you mine so willingly. Here I, Harriet.
And I, Harry.
Do solemnly protest.
And vow.
That I with you.
And I with you.
Will never marry. A match.
And no match. How do you like this indifference now?
You expect I should take it ill, I see.
I must confess, madam, you came a day after the fair.
You own then you're in love.
I do.
The confidence is generous. And in return I could almost find in my heart to let you know my inclinations.
Are you in love?
Yes. With this dear town. To that degree I can scarce endure the country in landscapes and hangings.
What a dreadful thing it would be to be hurried back to Hampshire.
Oh, name it not.
As for us, I find we shall agree well enough. Would we could do something to deceive the grave people.
Oh.
What think you of playing it on booty?
Oh. What do you mean?
Pretend to be in love with one another. 'Twill make some dilatory excuses we may fain pass the better.
Let us do it, if it be but for the dear pleasure of dissembling. Oh, peace! Here they come. I will lean against this wall and look bashfully down upon my fan, while you, like an amorous spark, modishly entertain me.
Never go about to excuse them. Come, come. It was not so when I was a young woman.
Does there something disrespectful, Lady Woodville?
Quality was then considered, and not railed at by every fleering fellow.
Youth will have its jest. Dorrit will...
It is good breeding now, to be civil to none but players and exchange women. They are treated by them as much above their condition as others are below theirs.
Don't depend it on them.
Oh, see, your son and my daughter. Oh, they've improved their acquaintance since they were within.
Dodd, methinks they have. Let's keep back and observe.
Yes.
Now for a look and gestures that may persuade him I'm saying all the passionate things imaginable.
Your head a little more on one side. Ease yourself on your left leg and play with your right hand.
Thus, is it not?
Now set your right leg firm on the ground. Adjust your belt, then look about you.
A little exercising will make me perfect.
Smile and turn to me again, very sparkish.
Oh, hello. Will you take your turn and be instructed?
With all my heart.
At one motion, play your fan, roll your eyes, and then settle a kind look upon me.
So?
Clap your hand up to your bosom, hold down your gown, shrug a little, draw up your breasts, and let them fall again, gently, with a sigh or two. Etc., etc.
By the good instructions you give, I suspect you for one of those malicious observers who watch people's eyes and from innocent looks make scandalous conclusions. It will not be amiss now to seem a little pleasant.
Clap your fan, then, in both hands. Snatch it to your mouth, smile, and with a lively motion, fling your body a little forward. So admirably well acted.
I think I am pretty apt at these matters.
Don't I like this well?
This promises something.
Come. There is love of the case, and there is, or will be. What say you, young lady?
All in good time, sir. You expect we should fall to when lovers gamecocks fight as soon as they're set together. Dodd, you're unreasonable.
Dodd, sure. I like thy wit well.
Mr. Medley, I pity the young lovers we last talked of. Though, to say truth, their conduct has been so indiscreet, they deserve to be unfortunate.
You've had an exact account from the great lady of the box down to Foggy Nan the Orange Woman.
You're a living libel, Mr. Medley, a breathing lampoon. I wonder you're not torn in pieces.
What think you of setting up an office of intelligence for these matters? The project may get money.
Ah, Belinda, what has become of you? We have not seen you here of late with your friend, Mrs. Lovett.
Dear creature, I left her but now, so sadly afflicted.
With her old distempered jealousy.
Dorimant has played her some new prank.
Well, that Dorimant is certainly the worst man breathing.
I once thought so.
And do you not think so still?
No, indeed.
Oh, Jesu, she loves him too.
The town does him a great deal of injury. And I will never believe what it says of a man I do not know again for his sake.
Had you seen him use Mrs. Lovett as I have done, you would never endure him more.
What, has he quarrelled with her again?
Upon the slightest occasion. He's jealous of Sir Fopling.
Oh.
She never saw him in her life but yesterday, and that was here.
On my conscience, Sir Fopling's the only man in town that's her aversion. How horribly out of humour she was all the while he talked to her.
And somebody has wickedly told Dorimant that
here he comes.
Dorimant, you're luckily come to justify yourself. Here is a lady.
Has a word or two to say to you from a disconsolate person.
You tender your reputation too much, I know, madam, to whisper with me before this good company.
To serve Mrs. Lovett, I'd make a bold venture.
Yes, Medley, the very spirit of scandal.
In a word, you've made me hate you, which I thought you never could have done.
In obeying your commands.
It was a cruel part you played. How could you act it?
Remember, 5 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I tremble when you name it.
Be sure you come.
I shall not.
Swear you will.
I dare.
Swear, I say.
By my life, by all the happiness I hope for.
You will?
I will.
Kind.
I'm glad I've sworn. I vow I think I should have failed you else.
Surprisingly kind. In what temper did you leave Lovett?
Her raving was prettily over, and she began to be in a brave way of defying you and all your works.
Persuade her to walk in the mall this evening.
She hates the place and will not come.
Do all you can to prevail with her.
For what purpose?
Sir Fopling will be here anon. I'll prepare him to set upon her there, before me.
You persecute her too much. But I'll do all you'll have me.
Tell her, plainly, 'tis grown so dull of business, I can drudge on no longer.
You must now excuse me.
Belinda, are you leaving us so soon?
I am to go to the park with Mrs. Lovett, madam.
Oh, this confidence will go nigh to spoil this young creature.
It'll do her good, madam.
The town has been very favourable to you this afternoon, my Lady Townley. You used to have an embarrass of chairs and coaches at your door, an uproar of footmen in your hall, and a noise of fools above here.
Indeed, my house is the general rendezvous, and next to the playhouse is the common refuge of all the young, idle people.
Company is a very good thing, madam, but I wonder you do not love it a little more chosen.
'Tis good to have an universal taste. We should love wit, but for variety be able to divert ourselves with the extravagant grievances of those who want it.
Fools will make you laugh.
Oh, once or twice. You are a little too delicate, Amelia.
Sir Fopling Flutter, madam, desires to know if you are to be seen.
Here's the freshest fool in town, and one who has not cloyed you yet. Pay,
madam.
Desire him to walk up.
Do not fall on him, Medley, and snub him. Soothe him up in his extravagance. He will show the better.
You know I have a natural indulgence for fools, and need not this caution, sir.
Harsh, wait without.
Oh, jeez, you...
Madame, I kiss your hands. I see yesterday was nothing of chance. The belle assemblée form themselves here every day. Ah, lady, your servant. Dormont, let me embrace thee. Without lying, I have not met with any of my acquaintance who retain so much of Paris as thou dost. Thou art a man of wit and understands the town. Prithee, let thee and I be intimate. There is no living without making some good man the confidant of our pleasures.
'Tis true, but there is no man so improper for such a business as I am.
Prithee, why hast thou so modest an opinion of thyself?
Why, first, I could never keep a secret in my life. And then, there is no charm so infallibly makes me fall in love with a woman as knowing a friend loves her. I deal honestly with you.
Thy humour's very gallant, or let me perish. I knew a French count so like thee.
Wit, I perceive, has more power over you than beauty, Sir Fopling, else you would not have let this lady stand so long neglected.
A thousand pardons, madame. Some civilities due, of course, upon the meeting a long absent friend. The éclat of so much beauty, I confess, ought to have charmed me sooner.
The brillant of so much good language, sir, has much more power than the little beauty I can boast.
I never saw anything prettier than this high work on your point d'Espagne.
Tis not so rich as point de Venise.
Not altogether, but looks cooler and is more proper for the season.
He's very finely dressed. Oh,
extreme proper.
A slight suit I made to appear in at my first arrival. Not worthy your consideration, ladies.
The pantaloon is very well mounted.
The tassels are new and pretty.
I never saw a coat better cut.
It makes me show long-waisted and I think slender.
That's the shape our ladies dote on.
Your breech, though, is a handful too high in my eyes, Sir Fopling.
Peace, Medley. I wished it lower 1,000 times, but a poxant will not be.
His gloves are very well fringed, large and graceful.
I was always éminent for being bien gonté.
He wears nothing but what are originals of the most famous hands in Paris.
You're in the right, madame.
The suit.
Barreuil.
The garniture.
Le grasse.
The shoes.
The picard.
The periwig.
A chedreux.
The glove.
A lingerie, you know, the swell ladies. Dormont. I could find in my heart for an amusement to have a galanterie with some of our English ladies.
Oh, 'tis a thing no less necessary to confirm the reputation of your wit than a duel will be to satisfy the town of your courage.
Here was a woman yesterday.
Mistress Lovett?
Prithee, what is she?
A person of quality, and one who has a rest of reputation enough to make the conquest considerable. Besides, I hear she likes you, too.
Methought she seemed, though very reserved and uneasy, all the time I entertained her.
Grimace and affectation. You will see her in the mall tonight.
Prithee, let thee and I take the air together.
I'm engaged to Medley, but I'll meet you at St. James's and give you some information upon the which you may regulate your proceedings.
All the world will be in the park tonight. Ladies! It were pity to keep so much beauty longer within doors and rob the ring of all those charms that should adorn it. Hepage!
Wait.
See that all my people be ready. We will take court tonight and be seen abroad. Dormont! Au revoir!
A fine mettled coxcomb.
Brisk and insipid.
Pert and dull.
However you despise him, gentlemen, I lay my life he passes for a wit with many.
That may very well be. Nature has her cheats, and puts sophisticate dullness often on the tasteless multitude for true wit and good humour. Medley, come.
I'll meet you in the mall.
Au revoir!
That's the Fopling, sir.
The old man will be here soon. Let's expect him in the garden.
Go, you are a rogue.
I can't abide you. Lizzie will be sent with a hue and a cry after us, but that's no matter.
It will look strangely in me.
With your friend, Mr. Dorriman, but here on the Marne now, that she might find me talking with him.
She does not know him, but dreads him, I hear, of all mankind.
She concludes if he does but speak to a woman, she's undone. Is on her knees every day to pray heaven defend me from him. Oh, look, here he comes. Oh, stand aside.
Tis she. Must be she. That lovely hair, that easy shape, those wanton eyes, and all those melting charms about her mouth which Medley spoke of. I'll follow the lottery and put in for a prize with my friend, Belair. I will approach them.
Most people prefer Hyde Park to the Mall.
It has a better reputation, I confess. But I abominate the dull diversions there. The formal bows, the affected smiles, the silly bywords, and amorous tweers in passing. Here one meets with a little conversation now and then.
These conversations have been fatal to some of your sex, madam.
Oh, maybe so. Because some who want temper have been undone by gaming, must others who have it deny themselves the pleasure of play?
Trust me, it were unreasonable, madam.
Lord, who's this?
Dorriman.
Overcast with seriousness of sudden, madam. A thousand smiles were shining in that face, but now I never saw so quick a change of weather.
I feel as great a change within, but he shall never know it.
You were talking of play, madam. Pray, what may be your stint?
A little harmless discourse in public walks, or at most an appointment in a box, barefaced, at the playhouse. You offer masks and private meetings where women engage for all they are worth, I hear.
That is in their power to do us good, and we despair not, but at some time or other they may be willing.
Mr. Belair, let us walk. 'Tis time to leave him. Men grow dull when they begin to be particular.
You're mistaken. Flattery will not ensue, though I know you're greedy of the praises of the whole mall.
You do me wrong.
I do not, as I followed you. I observed how you were pleased when the fops cried, "She's handsome, very handsome, by God she is," and whispered aloud your name, the thousand several forms you put your face into. Then, to make yourself more agreeable, how wantonly you played with your head, flung back your locks, and looked smilingly over your shoulder at him.
I do not go begging the men's as you do the ladies' good liking, with a sly softness in your looks and a gentle slowness in your bows as you pass by them. As thus, sir? Is not this like you?
Oh, your mother, madam, and busy.
Oh, my dear child.
Now is she so pleased with finding her again. She cannot chide her.
My daughter's now at High Mall, madam. The most entertaining time of all the evening.
I would fain see that Dorriman, mother. You should cry out for a monster. He's in the mall, I hear.
Come away, then. The plague is here, and you should dread the infection.
Oh, you may be misinformed of the gentleman.
Oh, no. I hope you do not know him. He is the prince of all the devils in the town. Delights in nothing but in rape and in riots.
If you did but hear him speak, madam.
Oh, he has a tongue they say would tempt the angels to a second fall.
Oh, hey, Chapelle, la fleur, la tour, la verdure. Dorriman!
Oh! Here. He is among this rout. No, he names him. Come away, Harriet. Come away.
This fool's coming has spoiled all. She's gone. But has left a pleasing image of herself behind that wanders in my soul. It must not settle there.
What reverie is this? Speak, man.
Snatched for myself, how far behind already I behold the shore.
Dorriman, a discovery. I met with Belair.
You can tell me no news, sir. I know all.
Oh, how do you like the daughter?
You never came so near truth in your life as you did in her description.
What think you of the mother?
Whatever I think of her, she thinks very well of me, I find.
Did she know you?
She did not. Whether she does now or no, I know not. Here was a pleasant scene towards when in came Sir Fopling, mustering up his equipage, and at the latter end named me and frightened her away.
Lovett and Belinda are not far off. I saw my light at St. James's.
Ah, Sir Fopling, hark you, a word or two. Look, you do not want assurance with Mrs. Lovett.
I never do on these occasions.
Mm-hmm. Walk on, we must not be seen together. Make your advantage of what I have told you. The next turn, you will meet the lady.
Follow me all to Liverpool.
Medley, you shall see good sport anon between Lovett and this fopling.
I thought there was something toward by that whisper.
You know a worthy principle of Lovett's.
Not to be so much as civil to a man who speaks to her in the presence of him she professes to love.
I have encouraged fopling to talk to her tonight.
Now you're here, she'll go nigh to beat him.
In the humour she's in, her love will make her do some very extravagant thing, doubtless.
Here they come.
I'll meet her and provoke her with a deal of dumb civility in passing by. Then turn short and be behind her when Sir Fopling sets upon her. See how unregarded now that piece of beauty passes. Bow now. Madam.
Madam.
And away.
How wonderful, respectfully, he bowed.
Dorriman's always over-mannerly when he has done a mischief.
Methought, indeed, at the same time, he had a strange, despising countenance.
The unlucky look he thinks becomes him.
What made you hail me to this odious place, Belinda?
Well, I hate to be hulched up in a coach. Walking is much better.
Would we could meet Sir Fopling now.
Lord, would you not avoid him?
I would make him all the advances that may be.
That would confirm Dorriman's suspicion, my dear.
He is not jealous, but I will make him so and be revenged a way he little thinks on. Pert? Oh,
if she should make him jealous, that may make Dorriman fond of her again. I must dissuade her from it. Lord, my dear, this will certainly make him hate you.
It will make him uneasy, though he does not care for me. I know the effects of jealousy on men of his proud temper.
'Tis a fantastic remedy. Its operations are dangerous and uncertain.
Bid the coachman send home four of his horses and bring the coach to Whitehall. I'll walk over the park.
Sir Fopling.
Madame, the honour of kissing your fair hands is a happiness I missed this afternoon at my Lady Townley's.
Ah, you were very obliging, Sir Fopling, the last time I saw you there.
The preference was due to your wit and beauty. Oh. Madame, your servant, there never was so sweet an evening.
Has drawn all the rabble of the town hither. Yonder's Dorriman, my dear.
I see him. He comes insulting, but I will disappoint him in his expectation.
Madam, I...
Oh, your liveries are the finest, Sir Fopling. Ah, your page. Oh. Your page is the prettiest dressed... they are all Frenchmen.
There's one damned English blockhead among them. You may know him by his mien.
Oh, that's he. Mm-hmm. That's he. What do you call him?
Hey! I know not what to call him.
What is your name?
John Trot, madam.
Oh, unsufferable. Trot?
Yeah.
Trot? Yeah. Trot! There's nothing so barbarous as the names of our English servants. What countryman are you, sir?
Hampshire, sir.
Then Hampshire be your name. Hey! Rampshire!
Oh, that sound. That sound becomes the mouth of a man of quality.
Hampshire!
Oh, merci.
Oh, Lord. Dorriman, she takes no notice of you.
She dissembles better than I thought she could have done. Damn it, I'm jealous of a counterplot.
You've tempted her with too luscious a bait. She bites at the fool.
She cannot fall from loving me to that.
You begin to be jealous in earnest.
Of one I do not love.
You did love her.
The fit has long been over.
But I have known men fall into dangerous relapses when they found a woman inclining to another.
Sir Fopling.
Medley guesses the secret of my heart. I am concerned, but dare not show it, lest Belinda should mistrust all I've done to gain her. I hope this happy evening, madam, has reconciled you to the scandalous mall. We shall have you hankering here again.
Sir Fopling, will you walk?
I am all obedience, madame.
Come along, then. And let's agree to be malicious on all the ill-fashioned things we meet.
Would you have brought some more of your friends, Dorriman, to have been witnesses to Sir Fopling's disgrace and your triumph?
It were unreasonable to desire you not to laugh at me. But pray, do not expose me to the town this day or two.
By that time you hope to have regained your credit.
I know she hates Fopling, and only makes use of him in order to work me on again. Had it not been for some powerful considerations, which will be removed tomorrow morning, I had made her pluck off this mask and show the passion that lies panting under.
Here comes a man from Belair with news of your last adventure with Harriet Woodville.
Well, I'm glad he sent him. I long to know the consequence of our parting.
Sir! Ah, sir!
My master desires you to come to my Lady Townley's presently and bring Mr. Medley with you. My Lady Woodville and her daughter are there.
Then all's well, Donovan.
They have sent for the fiddles and mean to dance. He bid me tell you, sir, the old lady does not know you and would have your own self to be Mr. Courtage.
What?
They're all prepared to receive you by that name.
Mr. Courtage.
This is Harriet's contrivance. Wild, witty, lovesome, beautiful and young.
This new woman would well supply the loss of Lovett.
That business must not end so. Before tomorrow's sun is set, I will revenge and clear it. And you, and Lovett to her cost, shall find I fathom all the depths of womankind.
A smart bout, a very smart bout of Dodd.
How do you like Amelia's dancing, brother?
Not at all. Not at all.
You speak not what you think, I'm sure.
No matter for that. Go bid her dance no more. It don't become her. It don't become her. Tell her I say so.
Dodd, I love her.
All people mingle nowadays, madam. And in public places, women of quality have the least respect showed up.
I protest, Mr. Courtage. A dozen such good men as you would be enough to atone for that wicked Dorriman and all the under-debauchees of the town. What's the matter there?
A pleasant mistake, madam, that a lady has made. Occasions a little laughter.
Come, you keep them idle. They're impatient to the fiddle's play.
You are not weary, madam? Your company is desired within, sir.
I go. Good Mr. Courtage, fare you well. Go. I'll see you no more.
What have I done, sir?
You're ugly. You are ugly. Is she not, Mr. Courtage?
Better words, or I shan't abide you.
Out of his... Dodd, what does she say? Hit her a pat for me. There.
Sir!
Madam?
You have charms for the whole family.
You'll spoil all with some unseasonable jest, Medley.
You see, I can find my tongue and am content to be a bare spectator, much contrary to my nature.
Methink, Mr. Dorriman, my Lady Woodville is a little fond of you.
Would her daughter were.
It may be you may find her, so try her. You have an opportunity. See, she stands yonder looking.
And I will not lose it. Bella! There's a lady has something to say to you.
I wait upon her.
Harry?
Mr. Medley, we both have business with you.
Oh, get you along then. Madam?
Sir?
That demure curtsy is not amiss in jest, but do not think in earnest it becomes you.
Affectation is catching, I find. From your grave bow I got it.
Where had you all that scorn and coldness in your look?
From nature, sir. Pardon my want of art. I have not learned those softnesses and languishings which now in faces are so much in fashion.
Oh, put on a gentle smile.
I am sorry my face does not please you as it is, but I shall not be complacent and change it.
I love her. I dare not let her know it. I fear she has the ascendant on me and may revenge the wrongs I have done her sex. Think of making a party, madam. Love will engage.
Oh, you make me start. I did not think to have heard of love from you.
I never knew what 'twas to have a settled ague yet, but now and then have had irregular fits.
Take heed, sickness after long health is commonly more violent and dangerous.
I have took the infection from her and feel the disease now spreading in me. Is the name of love so frightful that you dare not stand?
'Twill do little execution out of your mouth on me, I'm sure.
It has been fatal.
To some easy women, but we're not all born to one destiny. I was informed you used to laugh at love and not make it.
The time has been, but now I must speak.
If it be on that idle subject, I will put on my serious look, turn my head carelessly from you, drop my lip, let my eyelids fall and hang half all my eyes. Thus, while you buzz a speech for an hour long in my ear and I answer never a word, why do you not begin?
That the company may take notice how passionately I make advances of love and how disdainfully you receive them.
When your love's grown strong enough to make you bear being laughed at, I'll give you leave to trouble me with it. Till when, pray forbear, sir?
What's here? Oh, masquerades.
I thought that foppery had been left off and people might have been in private with a fiddle.
'Tis endeavour to be kept on foot still by some who find themselves the more acceptable the less they are known. Hence they mask their features thus.
This must be Sir Fopling.
That extraordinary habit shows it.
Look at his periwig. 6 foot at least.
This is the rest. Oh, a company of French rascals whom he picked up in Paris and has brought over to be his dancing equipage on these occasions. Oh, make him own himself. A fool is very troublesome when he presumes he's incognito.
Do you know me, madam?
Tender one, but I guess at you.
Are you women as fond of a vizard as we men are?
I'm very fond of a vizard that covers a face I do not like, sir.
Here are no masks, you see, sir, but those which came with you. This was intended a private meeting.
Oh.
But because you look like a gentleman, if you will discover yourself and we know you to be such, you shall be welcome.
I shall unmask, my dear Bel-Air.
Sir, how came you hither?
Faith, as I was coming late from Whitehall after the King's Couchet, one of my people told me he'd heard fiddles at my Lady Townley's.
You cannot say any more, sir.
Dorimore, let me kiss thee.
Ah, you, Sir Fopling, I came here under the name Cortege.
Enough, enough. Cortege. Medley, a pretty kind of young woman this. I observed her in the mall. More Evelé than our English women commonly are. Prithee, what is she?
The most noted coquette in town. Beware of her.
Let her be what she will. I have intrigues to tell thee. More pleasant than ever thou readst in a novel.
Write 'em, sir, and oblige us women. Our language wants such little stories.
Writing, madams, a mechanic part of wit. A gentleman should never go beyond a song or a billet.
Who are these maskers who stand so obsequiously at a distance?
Ah, a set of balladines whom I picked out of the best in France and brought over with a flute or two. My servants, they shall entertain you.
I had rather see you dance yourself, Sir Fopling. Yeah.
And I had rather do it. All the company knows it, but, madame...
Oh, come, no excuses, Sir Fopling.
By heavens, Medley.
Like a woman, I find you must be struggled with before one brings you to what you desire.
Emilia, can he dance and fence and sing too, if you'll believe him?
He has been more excellent in his heels than in his head. He went to Paris, a plain, bashful English blockhead, and has returned a fine undertaking French pop.
I cannot prevail. He will not dance.
Do not think it want of complaisance, madame.
You are too well bred to want that, Sir Fopling. I believe it want of power.
By heavens, and so it is. I have sat up so damned late and drunk so cursed hard since I came to this lewd town that I'm fit for nothing but low dancing now. A courant, a bourrée, or a minuet. But Maître Saint-André tells me, if I will but be regular, in 1 month I shall rise again on my toes. Pox on this debauchery.
I have heard your dancing much commended.
It had the good fortune to please in Paris. I was judged to rise within an inch as high as Monsieur Basquet. In an entree I danced there.
I am mightily taken with this fool. Let us sit. Here is a seat, Sir Fopling.
At your feet, madame. I can be nowhere so much at ease. By your leave, gown.
Oh, you'll spoil your clothes.
No matter. They are my creatures. I make them to make my court to you ladies. Commencez. I will dance. Dance! Ladies! Come on, say! Dropped! No. English motions, oh, horrid. Leave your damn manner of dancing and put on the French air. Sir. Have you not a pattern before you? Commencez! Pretty well. Imitation in time may bring him to something.
Hi, Dot, what have we here? A mummy?
Where is my daughter? Harriet?
Here, madam. I know not, but under these disguises there may be danger of sparks. I gave the young lady warning.
Lord, I'm so much obliged to you, Mr. Cortage.
Lord, I admire this man.
What have you to accept against him? He's a fox.
He's not a dormant. A wild, extravagant fellow of the times.
He's a man made up of forms and commons. Sucked out of the remaining leaves of the last age.
Do you know Sir Fopley, madam? He who will dance the French way for us?
I have seen that face. Oh, heaven! Tis the same we met in the mall. How came he here?
A fiddle in this town is a kind of fop call. Oh. No sooner it strikes up, the house is besieged with an army of masquerade strength.
Oh, Lord, I tremble, Mr. Cortage. For certain Dorriman is in the company.
And I cannot confidently say he is not. You had best be gone. I will wait upon you. Your daughter is in the hands of Mr. Belair.
I see her before me. Harriet, come away.
Mama!
The hour has almost come. I appointed Belinda. Oh, and I am not so foppishly in love here to forget. I am flesh and blood yet.
Oh, dear.
I'll call my Lady Woodville's coach to the door, quickly.
Lights, the dance is finished.
Lights down there.
And God, it needs not us. Stay, Mr. Medley. Let the young fellas do that duty. We will drink a glass of wine together. Yeah. Good after dancing. Out of piss. What mumming spark is that?
He is not to be comprehended in a few words. Where's Dorriment?
Stolen home. He's had business waiting for him there all this night, I believe, by an impatience I observed in him. Medley, Amelia and I are resolved on that other business.
Peace, your father.
Oh.
The women are all gone to bed. Phil, boy. Mr. Medley, begin a health. To Amelia. Out of piss. She's a rogue and I'll not pledge you.
I know you well.
A dog, drink it then.
Let us have the new bashik.
A dog, that's a hard word. What does it mean, sir?
A catch or drinking song.
Ah, well, let's have it then.
Fill the glasses round and draw up in a body.
The pleasures of love and the joys of good wine to perfect our happiness wisely we join.
We to beauty all day give the sovereign sway and a favorite nymph devoutly obey.
Come on!
At the place we are constantly making our court, and when they are ended we follow the sport. To the mall and the park where we love till it's dark. Then sparkling champagne puts her into the rain. It quickly recovers poor languishing lovers. Makes us frolic and gay and drowns all our sorrow. But alas, we relapse again on the morrow. Let every man stand with his glass in his hand. And briskly discharge at the word of command. Hear the health to all those whom tonight we depose. Wine and beauty by turns, great souls should inspire. Present all together. And now, boys, give fire.
John. Pretty business, very merry.
Hark you, Medley.
Let you and I take the fiddles and go waken Dorriment.
We shall do him a courtesy, if it be as I guess, for after the fatigue of this night, he'll quickly have his belly full and be glad of an occasion to cry, take away, Andy.
I'll go with you, and there we'll consult about affairs, Medley.
Oh, don't, it's 6 o'clock.
Let's away, then. Come, mon brave, light your flambeau.
What's the man mean, light my flambeau?
Tis days of foppling.
No matter. Our serenade will look the greater.
Why will you be gone so soon, Belinda?
Why did you stay out so late?
Call a chair.
I will, sir.
Oh, what makes you tremble so?
I have a thousand fears about me. Have I not been seen, think
but
you?
By nobody but myself and trusty Handy.
Where are all your people?
I have dispersed them on sleepless errands. Oh, what does that sigh mean?
Can you be so unkind to ask me? Well, were it to do again?
We should do it, should we not?
I think we should. the wicked a man you to make me love so well. Will you be discreet now?
I will.
You cannot.
Never doubt it.
I will not expect it.
You do me wrong.
You have no more power to keep the secret than I had not to trust you with it.
By all the joys I have had and those you keep in store.
You'll do for my sake what you never did before.
By that truth I have spoken. A wife shall sooner betray herself to her husband.
Yet I had rather you should be false in this than in another thing you promised me.
What's that?
That you would never see Lovett more. But in public places, in the park, at court, and at play.
It is not likely a man should be fond of meeting a damned old play when there is a new one acted.
I dare not trust your promise.
You may.
This does not satisfy me. You shall swear you will never see her more.
I will. 1,000 oaths by all...
Hold. You shall not, now I think on better.
I will swear.
I shall grow jealous of the oath, and think I owe your truth to that, not to your love.
Here's a chair.
Oh, let me go.
Oh, no, I cannot.
Too willingly, I fear.
Too unkindly feared. When will you promise me again?
Not this fortnight.
You will be better than your word.
I think I shall. Will it not make you love me less? Oh, what fiddles are these?
Look out, Hattie.
Mr. Medley, Mr. Belair, and Sir Fopling. They're coming up.
Oh,
how got they in?
The door was open for the chair.
Lord, let me fly.
Here, down the back stairs. I'll see you into the chair.
No, stay and receive them. And be sure you keep your word and never see Lovett more. Let it be a proof of your kindness.
It shall. Hand it, director. Yes. Everlasting love, go along with me.
Not a bed yet, Dormant.
You've had an irregular fit.
I have.
And is it off already?
Well, nature has done her part, gentlemen. When she falls kindly to work, great cures are effected in little time, you know.
We thought there was a wench in the case by the chair that waited. Prithee, Dormant, why hast not thou a glass hung up here? A room is the dullest thing without one.
Here is company to entertain you.
But I mean in case of being alone. In a glass a man may entertain himself.
A shadow of himself, indeed.
Correct the errors of his motions and his dress. 'Tis the best diversion in our retirements. Ah, Dorimant, thou art a pretty fellow and wears thy clothes well, but I never saw thee have a handsome cravat. Prithee, let me send my man to dress thee but one day. By heavens, an Englishman cannot tie a ribbon.
They are something clumsy-fisted.
I have brought over the prettiest fellow that ever spread the toilette.
You have a very fine Brandenburg on, Sir Poplin.
Well, it serves to wrap me up after the fatigue of a ball.
I see you often in it with your periwig tied up.
We should not always be in a set dress.
Ah.
'Tis more en cavalier to appear now and then in a déshabillé.
Ah. Pray, how goes your business with Lovett?
You might have answered yourself in the mall last night. Dorman, did you not see the advances she made me? Ah, hey, Latour, is my bath ready?
Oui, monsieur.
Adieu donc, mes chers.
Adieu.
When have you your revenge on Lovett, Dorimant?
I will but change my linen and about it.
The powerful considerations which hindered have been removed, then.
Most luckily, this morning. You must along with me. My reputation lies at stake there.
I'm engaged to Belair.
What's your business?
Matrimony and like you.
It does not, sir.
It may in time, Dorimant. What think you of Harriet?
What does she think of me?
I'm confident she loves you.
How does it appear?
Why, she's never well but when she's talking of you, but then she finds all the faults in you she can. She laughs at all who commend you, but then she speaks ill of all who do not.
Yeah, women of her temper betray themselves by their over-cunning. I had once a growing love with a lady who would always quarrel with me when I came to see her, and yet was never quiet if I stayed a day from her.
My father is in love with Amelia, and I must marry Harriet.
But that is a good warrant for your secret proceedings. Go on and prosper. I must love it. Medley, I'm sorry you cannot be a witness.
Make her meet Sir Fopling again in the same place and use him ill before me.
That may be brought about, I think. I'll be with your aunts anon and give you joy, Mr. Belair.
You had not best think of Harriet too much. Without church security, there's no taking up there.
I may fall into the snare, too. But the wise will find a difference in our fate. You wed a woman. I, a good estate.
Lord, where am I? In the mall? Whither have you brought me?
You have us no directions, madam.
The fright I was in made me forget it.
We used to carry a lady from Mr. Dorriman's to this address.
This is Lovett's house. I'm undone if she sees me. quickly. Carry me away.
No, wither ain't like her,
honour. Ask no questions.
Oh! Ah, have you seen my lady, madam?
I am just come to wait upon her.
She will be glad to see you, madam. She sent me to you this morning to desire your company, and I was told you went out by 5 o'clock.
More and more unlucky.
Will you walk in, madam?
I'll discharge my chair and follow you. Tell your lady I am here.
Very well, madam.
Take this. And if ever you should be examined, be sure you say you took me up in the Strand over against the Exchange, as you will answer to Mr. Dorrimont.
We will, and not it, honest.
Now, to come off, I must on. In confidence and lies, some hope is left. To a heart to be found out in the first theft.
In my eyes, Sir Fopling is no such despicable person.
Oh, you are an excellent judge, Pert.
He's as handsome a man as Mr. Dorrimont and as great a gallant.
Intolerable. It's not enough I submit to his impertinences, but must I be plagued with yours too?
Indeed, madam.
Tis false mercenary malice.
Mistress Belinda, madam.
What of her?
She's below.
How came she?
In a chair. Ambling Harry brought her.
He bring her? His chair stands near Dorrimont's door and always brings me from thence. Run and ask him where he took her up.
Yes, madam.
Go, there's no truth in friendship, neither. Women as well as men are all false, or all are so to me at least.
You are jealous of her, too.
Oh, you had best tell her I am, 'twill become the liberty you take of late. This fellow's bringing of her, her going out by 5 o'clock. I know not what to think. Belinda, you are grown an early riser, I hear.
Do you not wonder, my dear, what made me abroad so soon?
You do not used to be so.
The country Welsh gentlewomen I told you of. Lord, they have the oddest diversions. Would never let me rest till I promised to go with them to the markets this morning to eat fruit and buy nosegays.
Are they so fond of a filthy nosegay?
They complain of the stinks of the town and are never well but when they have their noses in one.
Whence came you now?
From their lodgings, where I crowded out of a coach and took a chair to come and see you, my dear.
Whither did you send for that chair?
'Twas going by empty.
Where do these Welsh country gentlewomen lodge, I pray?
In the Strand, over against the Exchange. That place is never without a nest of them. They're always, as one goes by, fleering in balconies or staring out of windows.
Footman, come hither.
Madam.
This footman, by her order, has been questioning the chairman. I threatened him with the name of Dorrimont. If this should have told truth, I am lost forever. In the Strand, said you?
Yes, madam, over against the Exchange.
Someone is below. You may leave.
Yes, madam.
I'm so frightened my countenance will betray me. Belinda, what makes you look so pale?
Want of my usual rest. And jolting up and down so long in an odious hackney.
Madam, Mr. Dorrimont.
How? What makes him here?
Dorrimont, then I am betrayed indeed. He has broken his word. And I love a man that does not care for me.
Do you faint, Belinda?
I think I shall. Such an oppression. On the sudden.
Oh, she's eaten too much fruit, I warrant you.
Not unlikely.
See, that lies heavy on her stomach.
Have her into my chamber, give her some surfeit water, and let her lie down a little.
Come, madam. I was a strange devourer of fruit when I was young. So ravenous.
So. Oh, that my love would but be calm a while, that I might receive this man with all the scorn and indignation he deserves.
Hey, Porge! Give positive order that none of my people stir. Let the canaille wait as they should do, since noise and no sauce have such powerful charms.
I, that I may successful prove, transform myself to what you love.
If that would do, you need not change from what you are. You can be vain and loud enough.
But not with so good a grace as a fopling.
Hey, Hampshire! Oh, that sound. That sound becomes the mouth of a man of quality.
This is not the first jealousy you have feigned to make a quarrel with me, and get a week to throw away on some such unknown inconsiderable slut, as you have been lately lurking with at plays.
Women, when they would break off with a man, never want the address to turn the fault on him.
You take a pride of late in using of me ill, that the town may know the power you have over me, which now, as unreasonably as yourself, expects that I, do me all the injuries you can, must love you still.
I am so far from expecting that you should. I begin to think you never did love me.
Would the memory of it were so wholly worn out in me that I did doubt it too. What made you come to disturb my growing quiet?
to give you joy of your growing infamy.
Insupportable! Insulting devil! This from you, the only author of my shame? This from another had been but justice, but from you? 'Tis a hellish and inhumane outrage. What have I done?
A thing that puts you below my scorn and makes my anger as ridiculous as you have made my love.
I walked last night with Sir Fopling.
To be seen publicly, so transported with the vain follies of that notorious fop, to me is an infamy. Below the sin of prostitution with another man.
Rail on. I am satisfied in the justice of what I did. You had provoked me to it.
What I did was the effect of a passion whose extravagances you have been willing to forgive.
And what I did was the effect of a passion you may forgive if you think fit.
Are you so indifferent, Grove?
I am.
Nay. Then 'tis time to part. I'll send you back your letters you have so often asked for.
So?
I have two or three of them about me.
Give them me.
Oh, you snatch, as though you thought I would not. There. And may the perjuries in them be mine, if e'er I see you more.
Stay.
Death, I want patience. Let me go.
I cannot. I can sooner part with the limbs that hold him. I hate that nauseous fool. You know I do.
Was it the scandal you were fond of, then?
You had raised my anger equal to my love, a thing you ne'er could do before, and in revenge I did... I know not what I did. Oh, would you would not think on't any more.
Should I be willing to forget it, I will be daily minded of it.
No.
'Twill be a commonplace for all the town to laugh at me.
No.
And Medley, when he is rhetorically drunk, will ever be declaiming on it in my ears.
Oh, it will be believed a jealous spite. Come, forget it. Oh.
Let me consult my reputation. You are too careless of it. You shall meet Sir Fopling in the mall again tonight.
What mean you?
I have thought on, and you must. 'Tis necessary to justify my love to the world. You can handle a coxcomb as he deserves when you are not out of humour, madam.
Public satisfaction for the wrong I have done you. This is some new device to make me more ridiculous.
Hear me.
I will not.
You will be persuaded.
Never.
Are you so obstinate?
Are you so base?
You will not satisfy my love.
I would die to satisfy that, but I will not. To save you from a thousand racks, do a shameless thing to please your vanity.
Farewell, false woman.
Go, go! Exquisite fiend, I knew you came but to torment me.
Belinda here. I am confounded and cannot guess how she came hither.
It is your fortune, Belinda, ever to be here when I am abused by this prodigy of ill nature.
I am amazed to find him here. How has he the face to come near you?
Here is fine work toward. I never was at such a loss before.
One who makes a public profession of breach of faith and ingratitude. I loathe the sight of him.
There is no remedy. I must submit to their tongues now and some other time bring myself off as well as I can.
Other men are wicked, but then they have some sense of shame. He is never well, but when he triumphs, nay, glories to a woman's face in his villainies.
You are in the right, Belinda, but methinks your kindness for me makes you concern yourself too much with him.
Oh, it does indeed, my dear. Well, his barbarous carriage to you yesterday made me hope you ne'er would see him more. And the very next day, to find him here again, provokes me strangely. But, because I know you love him, I have done.
Belinda, I am to blame in some circumstances, I confess. But as to the main, I am not so guilty as you imagine. Ladies, I will seek a more convenient time to clear myself.
Do it now. What impediments are here?
I want time and you want temper.
These are weak pretenses.
You are never more mistaken in your life. And so farewell.
Call a footman. Pat, quickly, I will have him dogged.
I wish you would not, for my quiet and your own. Footman?
I'll find out the infamous cause of all our quarrels, pluck her mask off and expose her bare face to the world. Footman!
Oh, let me but escape this time. I'll never venture more.
Belinda, you shall go with me.
I have such a heaviness hangs on me with what I did this morning. I would fain go home and sleep, my dear.
Death and eternal darkness. I shall never sleep again. Raging fevers seize the world and make mankind as restless all as I am. Footman! Footman!
I knew him false and helped to make him so. Was not her ruin enough to fright me from the danger? It should have been. But love can take no warning.
Come, Mr. Smirk. They are well and truly well.
Well and
truly.
This wedding will strangely surprise my brother when he knows it.
Oh, your nephew ought to conceal it for a time, madam.
Yes, yes.
Since marriage has lost its good name, prudent men seldom expose their own reputations till 'tis convenient to justify their wives.
Where are you all there? Help, oh, God, will nobody hear?
My father.
We are ruined, he will discover more. Oh. Quickly, Mr. Smirk, into this a closet. You must not be seen yet.
Desire Mr. Herb, the lawyer, to walk into the lower parlour. I'll be with him presently.
Yes, sir.
Where have you been, Harry? You couldn't wait on me today.
About a business.
Are you so good at business? Todd, I have a business too. You shall dispatch out of answer. Send for a parson, sister. My Lady Woodville and her daughter are coming.
What need you huddle up things thus?
Apt to piss. Youth is apt to play the fool, and it is not good it should be in their power.
Oh, brother.
He will marry Harriet.
You need not fear your son.
He's been idling this morning, and Todd, I do not like him. Amelia, how dost thou do, sweetheart?
Oh, sir, you are very severe, sir. Must they marry in such haste?
Go to, thou art a rogue, and I'll talk with thee anon. Here's my Lady Woodville come. Welcome, madam. Mr. Firms, below the writing, shall wed my son and your daughter.
Let us down and make an end, then.
Sister, show the way. Come on, then, to Mr. Firm. And let us sign the papers, sister. Harry, come away, I say.
What will you do, madam?
Be carried back again and mewed up in the country again. Run away here. Anything rather than be married to a man I do not care for. Emilia, do thou advise me?
Harry is engaged, you know.
I do. But know not what the fear of losing an estate may fright him to.
In the desperate condition you're in, you should consult with some judicious man. What think you of Mr. Dorrimont?
I do not think of him at all.
She thinks of nothing else, I'm sure.
How fond your mother was of Mr. Cortage.
If I contrive the estate to make a little math, you believe I like the man?
Harry believes you love Dorrimont. He has a great deal of wit.
And takes a great deal of pains to show it.
He's extremely well-fashioned.
Addictedly grave, or ridiculously wild and apish.
You defend him still against your mother.
I would not were he justly railed, but I cannot hear anyone undeservedly railed at.
Has your woman learnt the song you were so taken with?
I was fond of a new thing. 'Tis dull at a second hearing.
Mr. Dorrimont made it.
She knows it, madam, and has made me sing it at least a dozen times this morning.
She has a voice will grate your ears worse than a catcall, and dresses so ill she's scarce fit to trick up a yeoman's daughter on a holy day.
As Amoret with Phyllis sat one evening on the plain, and saw the charming Strephon wait to tell the nymph his pain, the threatening danger to remove, she whispered softly in her ear, "Ah, Phyllis, if you would not love this shepherd, do not hear. None ever had so strange an art his passion to convey into a listening virgin's heart and steal her soul away. Fly, fly, betimes, for fear you give occasion for a hapless fate. In vain, said she, in vain I strive. Alas, 'tis now too late.
Music so softens and disarms the mind
that not one arrow does resistance find.
Let us make use of the lucky minute, then.
My love springs with my face. I dare not look upon him yet.
Mistress Bride, for such I know this happy day has made you.
Defer the formal joy you are to give me, and mind your business with her. Here are dreadful preparations, Mr. Dorrimont. Writing, sealing, and a parson sent for.
To marry this lady?
To young Belair.
Condemned she is. And what will become of her I know not without you generously engage in a rescue.
In this sad condition, madam, I can do no less than offer you my service.
Your tongue is so famed for falsehood, 'twill do the truth an injury.
Oh, turn not away, then, but look on me and guess it.
Did you not tell me there was no credit to be given to faces?
that women nowadays have their passions as much at will as they have their complexions, and put on joy and sadness, scorn and kindness, with the same ease they do their paint and patches. Are they the only counterfeits?
You wrong your own while you suspect my eyes. By all the hope I have in you, the inimitable colour in your cheeks is not more free from art than are the sighs I offer.
In men who have been long hardened in sin, we have reason to mistrust the first signs of repentance.
The prospect of such a heaven will make me persevere, and give you marks that are infallible.
What are those?
I will renounce all the joys I have in friendship, and in wine, sacrifice to you all the interest I have in other women.
Hold! Though I wish you devout, I would not have you turn fanatic. Could you neglect these a while? And make a journey into the country?
To be with you, I could live there. I never send one thought to London.
What dare you say? I know all beyond High Park's a desert to you, and that no gallantry can draw you further.
That has been the utmost limit of my love, but now my passion knows no bounds, and there's no measure to be taken of what I'll do for you.
When I hear you talk thus in Hampshire, I shall begin to think there may be some little truth enlarged upon.
Is this all? Will you not promise?
I hate to promise. What we do then is expected from us, and wants much of the welcome it finds when it surprises.
May I not hope?
That depends on you, and not on me. And 'tis to no purpose to forbid it.
Oh, faith, madam, now I perceive the gentleman loves you too. E, let him know your mind and torment yourselves no longer.
Dost think I have no sense of modesty?
Think, if you lose this, you may never have another opportunity.
May he hate me? A curse that frights me when I speak it. If ever I do a thing against the rules of decency and honour.
I am beholding to you for your good intentions, madam.
I thought the concealing of my marriage from her might have done you better service.
Try her again.
What have you resolved, madam? The time draws near. To be obstinate and protest against this marriage.
Amelia, quickly, quickly, let Mr. Smirk out of the closet.
A parson? Had you laid him in here?
I knew nothing of him.
Should it appear you did, your opinion of my easiness may cost you dear.
It appears the canonical hour is almost past. Sister, is the man of God come?
He waits your leisure.
By your favour, sir. Pretty spruce fellow. What may we call him?
Mr. Smirk, my Lady Bigot's chaplain.
A wise woman, a dodgy is. The man will serve for the flesh as well as the spirit. Please you, sir, to commission a young couple to go to bed together in God's name. Harry?
Here, sir.
Out of his. Without your mistress in your hand.
Is this the gentleman?
Yes, sir.
You're not mistaken, sir.
But not, I think not, sir. You look as if he would forbid the banns, Mr. Smirk. I hope you have no pretensions to the lady.
Wish him joy, sir. I have done him the good office today, already.
Out of bed. What do I hear?
Never storm, brother. The truth is out.
How say you, sir? Is this your wedding day?
It is, sir.
And, oh God, it shall be mine too, Amelia. Give me thy hand, sweetheart. What does that mean? Give me thy hand, I say. Harry, why would you kneel? And Amelia? I guess at it.
Come, come. Give her your blessing. She is the woman your son loved and is married to.
Cheated! Cutted! And by your contrivance, sister.
What would you do with her? She's a rogue and you can't abide her.
Shall I hit her a pat for you, sir?
Dog, you're all rogues. And I never will forgive you.
Wither! Wither away!
Let him go and cool a while.
Here's a business broke out now, Mr. Cortage. I'll into the country straight.
Don't, madam! You shall hear me first.
Hither are my man dogged him.
Yonder he stands, my dear. I see him, and with him the face that has undone me. Oh, that I were but where I might throw out the anguish of my heart. Here it must rage within and break it.
Mrs. Lovett, are you afraid to come forward?
I was amazed to see so much company here in a morning. The occasion sure is extraordinary.
Love it, Anne Belinda. The devil owes me a shame today, and I think we'll never have done paying it.
Married! Dear Amelia, how I am transported with the news.
Dorimant, I little thought Amelia was the woman Mr. Belair was in love with. I chide her for not trusting me with a secret.
How do you like Mrs. Lovett?
She is a famed mistress of yours, I hear.
She has been on occasion.
She's extremely...
extremely overjoyed at something.
At nothing. Mrs. Lovett is one of those hoiting ladies who gaily fling themselves about and force a laugh when their aching hearts are full of discontent and malice.
Oh, heavens! I was never so near killing myself with laughing. Mr. Dorrimont, are you a bride man?
Mr. Dorrimont? Oh, Mr. Cottage is Mr. Dorrimont. Is this true, madam?
If you doubt it, your daughter can resolve you, I suppose.
Out of his. What's here more, knavery yet?
Harriet, on my blessing, come away, I charge you.
Dear mother, do but stay and hear me.
I am betrayed, and thou art undone, I fear.
Do not fear it. I have not, nor ever will, do anything against my duty. Believe me, dear mother, do.
I had trusted you, Mrs. Lovett, with the secret, but that I knew the violence of your nature would ruin my fortune, as now, unluckily, it has. I thank you, madam.
She's an heiress, I know, and very rich.
To satisfy you, I must give up my interest wholly to my love. Had you been a reasonable woman, I might have secured them both and been happy.
You might have trusted me with anything of this kind. You know you might. Why did you go under a wrong name, Mr. Cottage?
The story is too long to tell you now. Be satisfied. This is the business. This is the mask has kept me from you.
Was it no idle mistress, then?
Believe me, a wife to repair the ruins of my estate that needs it.
The knowledge of this makes my grief hang lighter on my soul, but I shall never more be happy.
He's tender of my honour, though he's cruel to my love.
Belinda.
Do not think of clearing yourself with me. It is impossible. Do all men break their words thus?
The extravagant words they speak in love. 'Tis as unreasonable to expect we shall perform all we promise then as do all we threaten when we're angry. When I see you next...
Take no notice of me, and I shall not hate you.
How came you to Mrs. Lovett?
By a mistake the chairmen made for want of my giving them directions.
It was a pleasant one. We must meet again.
Never.
Never?
When we do, may I be as infamous as you are false.
Lady Woodville, men of Mr. Dorriman's character always suffer in the general opinion of the world.
What? You can make no judgment of a witty man from common fame, considering the prevailing faction, madam. No,
Donnie's in the right.
Besides, 'tis a common error amongst women to believe too well of them they know and too ill of them they don't.
Doddy observes well.
Believe me, madam, you will find Mr. Dorriman as civil a gentleman as you thought Mr. Courtney.
If you would but know him better.
You have a mind to know him better. Come away. You shall never see him more.
Dear mother, stay.
I won't be consenting to your ruin.
Were my fortune in your power?
Your person is.
Could I be disobedient? I may take it out of yours and put it into his.
Tis that you would be at. You would marry this Dorriman.
I cannot deny it. I would. And never will marry any other man.
Is this the duty that you promised?
But I will never marry him against your will.
Oh, she knows the way to melt my heart. Upon yourself light your undoing.
Come, sir. You have not the heart any longer to refuse your blessing on this, your son and daughter-in-law.
Dod, I had not. Oh. Rise and God bless you both. Make much of her, Harry. She deserves thy kindness. Dod, sirrah, I did not think it had been in thee.
It is a damned windy day.
What have we now?
Hey, Plage, is my periwig right?
A little out of order, sir.
It pocks at this apartment. It wants an antechamber to adjust oneself in. Madame, I came from your house and your servants directed me hither.
I will give order hereafter. They shall direct you better.
Am I guilty of an indiscretion, madame?
You will be. A great one if you continue your mistake, sir.
Something put you out of humour.
The most foolish, inconsiderable thing that ever did.
Is it in my power?
To hang or drown it. Do one of them and trouble me no more.
Sophia. Medley, where's Dorrimont?
Methinks the lady has not made you those advances today. She did last night, Sir Fopling.
Prithee do not talk of her.
She would be a bonne fortune.
Not to me at present.
How so?
No one woman is worth the loss of a cut in a caper.
Not when it's so universally designed.
Mr. Dorrimont, everyone has spoke so much in your behalf that I can no longer doubt but that I was in the wrong.
There's nothing but falsehood and impertinence in this world. All men are villains or fools. Take example from my misfortunes. Belinda, if thou wouldst be happy, give thyself wholly up to goodness.
Mr. Dorrimont has been your God Almighty long enough. 'Tis time to think of another.
Jeered by her.
I will lock myself up in my house and never see the world again.
A nunnery is the more fashionable place for such a retreat, and has been the fatal consequence of many a belle passion.
Hold heart till I get home. Should I answer, it would make her triumph greater.
So give her your hand, Sir Fopling. She leaves.
Shall I wait upon you, madame?
Legion of fools! As many devils take thee!
Dorimant, I pronounce thy reputation clear, and henceforward, when I would know anything of woman, I will consult no other oracle.
She's stark mad, by all that's handsome. Dorimant, thou hast engaged me in a pretty business.
I have a pleasure now to talk about it.
Atropate, what does this man of mold do here again?
He'll be an excellent entertainment within, brother, and is luckily come to raise the mirth of the company.
Madam, I take my leave of you.
What do you mean, madam?
Well, to go this afternoon. Part of my way to Hartley.
And odd you shall stay and dine first. Come, we'll all be good friends, and you shall give Mr. Dorimant leave to wait upon you and your daughter in the country.
Well, if his occasions bring him that way, I have now so good an opinion of him, he shall be welcome.
To a great, rambling, lone house. That looks as it were not inhabited, the family's so small. There you'll find my mother, an old lame aunt, and myself, sir, perched up on chairs at a distance in a large parlour, sitting moping like three or four melancholy birds in a spacious vollery. Does not this stagger your resolution?
Not at all, madam. The first time I saw you, you left me with the pangs of love upon me. And this day my soul has quite given up her liberty. Madam.
This is more dismal than the country. Amelia, pity me. Oh, I'm going to that sad place. Methinks I hear the hateful noise of the rooks already. Caw, caw. Ooh. There's music in the worst cry in London. My dill and cow cumbers to pickle.
Sister, knowing of this matter, I hope you provided us some good cheer.
I have, brother, and the fiddles, too.
And let it strike up, then. The young lady shall have a dance before she departs, and then we'll in and make this an arrant wedding day. And if this honest audience rejoice, a Dodd the boy has made a happy choice. Strike up the dance, I say! Strike up!
Most modern wits, such monstrous fools have shown, they seemed not of heaven's making, but their own. Those nauseous harlequins in farce may pass, but there goes more to a substantial ass. Something of man must be exposed to view, that gallants they may more resemble you. Sir Fopling is a fool so nicely writ, the ladies would mistake him for a wit. And when he sings, talks loud, and cocks, would cry, I vow me thinks he's pretty company. So brisk, so gay, so travailed, so refined, as he took pains to graft upon his kind. True fops help nature's work and go to school, to file and finish God Almighty's fool. Yet none Sir Fopling him or him can call. He's Knight of the Shire, and represents ye all. His various modes from various fathers follow. One taught the toss, and one the new French wallow. From one the sacred periwig he gained, which wind ne'er blew, nor touch of hat profaned. Another's diving bow he did adore, which with a shog casts all the hair before, till he with full decorum brings it back, and rises with a water-spaniel shake. As for his songs, the lady's dear delight, though sure he took from most of you who write. Yet every man is safe from what he feared, for no one fool is hunted from the herd.
Derek Jacobi played Dorimant, Anna Massey, Lady Townley, Sarah Bedell, Mrs. Lovett, Maureen O'Brien, Belinda, and Nigel Stock, Old Belair, in The Man of Mode, by George Etheridge. Medley was Geoffrey Collins, Young Belair, Simon Treves, Sir Fopling Flutter, John Webb, Emilia, Helena Breck, Lady Woodville, Pauline Letts, Harriet, Catherine Herbert, Pert, Avril Clark, Busy, Tessa Worsley, Handy, Edward D'Souza, Foggy Nan, Carol Boyd, Shoemaker, Ronald Herdman, John Trott and a Page, Christopher Scott, a Footman and the Reverend Smirk, Adrian Egan. The prologue and epilogue were spoken by Anna Massey. The music was composed and arranged by Martin Best. The director was Martin Jenkins.